Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex F1, and joining me in the podcasting shed is Matt Trumpets.
Hey there, Spanners, how you doing?
Yeah, a bit bored, really, really dull weekend of Formula 1. Don't know what we're going to talk about.
Barely anything happened.
This really was one of the most significant championship weekends. This is like a keystone. When they look at the highlights reel, stuff from this weekend in one way or another is going to be featuring in it. Am I wrong?
Nope. We set some records and we added a splash of drama.
An absolutely breathtaking weekend of F1 in many ways. So, what are we doing here, Matt? We are an independent F1 podcast, but we are delighted to be featured on Downforce Radio as long as they'll have us. That's where we host e-radio shows, Matt, as well, Matt. We talk about electric cars and stuff like that.
Ooh, and silicon carbide capacitors and every fun thing.
So you can find us on the Downforce feed. You can also find us by searching Missed Apex Podcast on your podcatcher of choice or on iTunes. Just a quick note to say, you may be finding us on a revised feed, the Judge 13 feed. We've agreed to allow the MP3 to go on there for the short term. You can think of it as a no cash down syndication deal. I'm delighted to have the chance to reconnect with some of my old listeners. But the place you will always find Missed Apex Podcast is at spannersready.com. So what can we offer people here, Matt, that they can't get elsewhere?
Well, we offer them an independent podcast that even the kids can listen to.
Yes, we're going to remain safe for work, so my now officially 6-year-old son can listen to it without picking up any naughty language. We are also going to try and give people a race review very shortly after the race. We're doing live streams. We've been doing them at 7:30 p.m. But due to my son's birthday, we're going for 8:30 p.m. today. But it'll be ready for your Monday morning commute. I don't know if anyone else does that, Matt.
I don't know that anybody does. The earliest ones usually come out tomorrow evening.
I don't know. Yeah, or Tuesday even. So there we go. Stick with us. Stick with us at Missed Apex Podcast. So that's some of the...
You might be wrong, but we're first.
That's very, yes, I love that. I absolutely love that. It may be utter rubbish that we're spewing, but it's at least you've got something to say at the water cooler if you didn't have your own opinion. So that's some of the housekeeping out the way. Very key to Missed Apex Podcast is that you join the conversation. We've got a few ways to do that. We have the chat room manned by Tony Potato Boy Barnard. Sorry, Thunderbeast Barnard.
Hello, how are you doing?
How are you going, T? Thank you very much for manning the chat room today.
I'm sorry, I thought we were calling him Naked Face today.
Yeah, I know, he's got no beard. I hate to be rude, but you look disgusting without a beard.
I know. I grow the beard because it covers up about 30% of a face, yeah. I'm not 100% happy with. So now it's shaved off, there was an incident, and now, yeah.
How's the wife feel about it? Is she taking
incident?
Mixed feelings. She likes the not prickliness of the beard, but I don't think she's enjoying the fact that I said before that part of the face is now uncovered.
It's now exposed. And not only does she have to see it, but like her friends see it as well. It's humiliating all around. Someone who's too young to grow a beard, though, it's Chris Stevens from Formula Spy. How's it going, Chris?
I can grow a beard.
Prove it.
I just don't look good in one.
Prove it. You can't.
Fine. Next week.
Next week, beard. A week's growth.
And I'll be stroking it and everything while I think about your questions.
Enjoying writing still, Chris?
No, I went off it this week. No,
what's the last thing you wrote?
Last thing I wrote, I think it was something about Haas today. It's something about the Spanish Grand Prix. Is that good enough?
It's very relevant. Tell you what, before we get to the Spanish Grand Prix, we like to do a thing we call pre-race tidbits. And this week, I think we'll hand over to our sort of non-F1 guy. You like to give us some of the insights and observations. But, you know, you're quickly becoming not a non-F1 guy, aren't you, Tony? You've been watching the races all season now.
Yeah, I need to be careful to not learn too much. Otherwise, my hook will be gone and I'll just be a substandard panellist like everyone else.
Yes, and Mist Apex...
Not on here. I mean, other...
Oh, right. No. I'm very clear on the Mist Apex description on iTunes to say Spanners and Matt lead a crew of very incompetent. So that's fine. Your opinion's valid. What did you observe in the world of F1 pre-race?
So, you know, at the beginning where they did that thing and they got in the car, a beautiful white car, and... Steve Jones is in the back and they're going along and he pulls out some pub trivia like, oh, that's all man-made. And Susie Wolf's like, oh, I didn't know that. Forget F1. You should have your own travel show. And Jones says, I think too many people are saying that right now. Let's keep that to ourselves.
Oh, as in you should go off and do a travel show.
Yeah, because I think that was a bit of an acknowledgement of a lot of people are questioning his credentials to be on there.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't have the credentials to be on there. I mean, he's doing a professional job, but I think he might have carried a reputation in of putting people off, including myself.
Yeah, but although I can appreciate and respect the fact that, you know, he doesn't take it too seriously, doesn't take himself too seriously, sort of acknowledged it there.
Yeah, well, I don't know. What does he want to do? If you employ Steve Jones to do your F1 presenting... then you're going to get Steve Jones doing your F1 presenting. You can't then complain. So it's either the producer's fault or nothing. Do you know what I mean? It's not Steve Jones's fault for being Steve Jones, is it?
I get the impression that the people he's working with now are like, yeah, he's all right. And they're like laughing and joking about it. And, you know, he's coming there and he's doing his best and he's fulfilling his obligations. But as you say, it's not his fault. Like, yeah, you'll be fine. You can do this. Come on in.
Okay, so you've got some actual racing stuff in the notes for us, Matt. Thanks for doing the show notes for me. I was knee-deep in jelly and bouncy castles, so I was unable to perform that duty.
Yes, nothing like a six-year-old birthday to make life entertaining.
I'm exhausted.
Especially if you're trying to do something else.
I thought that was just a regular Sunday for you, Spanish.
No, it was a birthday, bouncy castles, jelly, all that thing. I even did, and I will treat you to it at the end of the show, we recorded a music video of Everything's Awesome, and I did the rap portion of that. And I know that's tragic for a 35-year-old man. I know that.
That is tragic.
But I will 100% play the show out with that. So what Formula One stuff have you got? Something about Ocon obviously took Palmer's car for practice one and did just nothing with it.
Yes, it literally did nothing with it as he failed to turn even a single lap time before the car irrevocably broke down.
See,
so I think he's hanging out for the test afterwards and we'll get to do some more driving.
So how does Palmer feel about that? Does he sit there and think, oh, good, at least he doesn't show me up in my car? Or does he think, you know, oh, dear, that means I lose information?
Well, I think if I'm Palmer, it was a lost afternoon no matter what.
All right, so it doesn't matter either way. But then he went and lost P2 as well with a mysterious exploding tire.
That's right. And we never heard, I think Pirelli never came up with a definitive cause, but they decided that it wasn't tire related because all the other cars didn't have it on the same lap.
It's not tire related. The tire blew up. That's as tire related as you can get. Probably as in the bodywork did it. Oh, okay.
So,
fair enough.
Like, remember what Williams had in China?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
they had
this
new bit of rear bodywork that kept cutting into their tire during practice, anyway. They were really confused about it for ages.
Fair enough. Did anyone cheat, Matt? You got a thing in there about cheating.
We had an interesting Twitter conversation earlier. Now, I know you are not the most sciencey of persons.
Oh, come on.
But even you would know the answer to this physics question. If you take a tire at a given pressure and you raise the temperature, say a racing tire at 105 degrees and raise it up to about 140, 150 racing temperature, what's going to happen to your pressure?
The pressure will increase.
That's right. Well,
yes.
It may be that, interestingly enough, during the race, some teams' tire pressures have been decreasing by as much as 1 to 2 pounds per square inch.
How that can't happen? That goes against the physics question you just set me.
Yeah. Well, yes, it does. And Pirelli is a mite concerned about it, which is why you heard them confirming they'll be monitoring tire pressures Monaco forwards in real time. Summers clarified that they're actually testing several different methods, I think, starting at Monaco. But a lot of tongues were wagging as to exactly who it might have been.
Yeah.
It was rumored to be a leading team and a midfield team.
Well, that's McLaren out then, because they're a tail ender.
That's right. A leading team and a midfield team that are connected and might suddenly have been doing a lot better than previously they have been doing.
Okay, so who's connected with McLaren?
It's got nothing to do with McLaren.
Oh, you said
McLaren. McLaren went to the FIA and asked for clarification about the rules regarding tires.
Okay, so
and
Ferrari.
This has all come out of that request.
Go on, tell me who it is, because I'm not good at riddles. Tell me the two teams in question.
Well, I would just say it might rhyme with Red Bull and Toro Rosso.
Love it. I absolutely love it. So that's how they've done it. They've cheated.
Yeah, once the rules are clarified, if it continues, then it's cheating has generally been the way the game gets played.
So they get an advantage by somehow magically getting the tire pressures to remain low or even go
lowering them during the race.
Because they take the pressure on the grid. Do they on the grid?
Yep.
Or yeah.
They take the pressure when the tire is static.
Wow.
And
so they're managing to somehow release pressure and therefore get more of a contact patch on the tire, get more grip, etc.
Back down, you remember Romain Grosjean complaining about the tire pressures in China being so high. This was Pirelli's reaction to seeing that data.
It's almost like you go, well, if you've managed that, I'm not even mad. I'm just like, I'm impressed. How have you done that? This is like a Dick Dastardly style device that is letting down tire pressure. I just, hats off. Well done.
Yes. Anyway, we don't know exactly how it's done. We had a rather lengthy and entertaining conversation about possible mechanisms.
Go on, just name one. Name one possible one.
Well, Summers was a big fan of a peristaltic chamber with like a valve that would be actuated by the rotation of the wheel.
Wow.
I had in mind that there could actually be like just a basically spring-loaded mechanism that again would be very vulnerable to lateral force but would push straight up. You could also go with a metal that changes shape when it heats up because they control the heat of the temperature. They control the heat of the tire with the brake duct and the way they run that. Any of these things might be possible, you know. But the essence of the thing is that you're increasing the volume area for the gas to be in while the tire is in motion, but that it reverts to standard when it's still.
Okay, can we move on to qualifying? Because I have some concerns.
Yes, we can.
My concern is what on earth happened to Ferrari, who looked on the limit in the practices, who looked quick. Then they suddenly just disappeared in qualifying. And the report I'm hearing is that they changed the setup for qualifying. They took wing off, which seems like madness at a track like Barcelona, where you want downforce, downforce, downforce. And they actually ended up with a slower time on the soft tire in qualifying than they had on the medium tire in practice. What on earth is going on at Ferrari right now?
I kind of wish I had an explanation for it, but I really, really don't. It's bizarre. Like you said, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to take wing off on a track like Barcelona. It's so high speed in nature. There's so many long, very fast corners.
Yeah.
And Ferrari were really chomping at the bit at Mercedes in practice. But, I mean, make no mistake, Mercedes do sandbag a lot on a Friday. They have this tendency to get to Q2 and all of a sudden they turn the wick up to 11 on their engine. They go and find another half a second or three quarters of a second compared to the rest of the field. So I think part of it maybe some of that, but you're right, Ferrari definitely made a step backwards when they came into qualifying.
Matt?
Well, if you consider the difference in track temperature between the morning and the afternoon, you could see expecting the tires to have more grip because it's hotter and maybe taking some wing off. And they do. They take wing off when they go from the medium to the soft tire, I know. And they add wing when the medium tire goes on. That's pretty standard at a lot of – I've seen it before, as has anyone who's paid attention. So maybe they just got that wrong. Maybe they didn't get the tires into the proper operating temperature because they changed the wing setting, thinking they'd have more mechanical grip.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought that the speed advantage on the straights would be worth the loss of time because you need more mechanical grip coming out of Sector 3 anyway.
But
whatever it is, they got it wrong, and they got it wrong at a very bad time.
Well, they got it wrong this time. They've got it wrong on pit stop strategies. They've got it wrong on tire choices in races. They're getting it wrong an awful lot. It's a disaster at Ferrari. And all we're hearing, like, Arriba Veni is coming out, well, we're definitely going to win in Barcelona. You know, I expect to win. Like, why would you make a statement like that when you've got so far to make up? The stars would have had to have aligned for them to win had Mercedes completed the race. So where's that belief coming from? Is that just a lot of big smoke to try and keep his job?
It's Sergio Marchionne breathing down his neck, isn't it?
Yeah, so he's like, well, we'll definitely win. But that's a very short-term gain, isn't it? Until the end of the weekend.
The thing is, I do think Ferrari had a sniff at a win today, even if Mercedes had stayed in the race. I feel like I'm going to be argued.
Well, I would say I think they possibly had more than a sniff because they were reacting to Red Bull. But the point I wanted to make, or what I wanted to add, is yeah, you're absolutely right. As Marchionne said, he expected the win this weekend. I think, was that what he said?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, ominously enough, he came out and said that he fully supported Arrivederci in his job.
Oh, the dreaded vote of confidence nightmare.
He said, oh, no, his job's not in jeopardy at all, which, of course, in F1 speak, means that he's done.
Exactly. If a football chairman comes out and says that.
Arriva Benny has been the best thing to happen to that team for the last 5 years.
Well, who's making the strategy calls? Is it – do we know?
I think Jacques Clear is part of that team.
But... Right. T, you look like you're about to pipe up.
Yeah, Anonymous 27931. Arriva Benny is gone after Monaco, he reckons.
Oh, after Monaco. Well, thanks for joining us, Anonymous. If you get a Ustream account, I think you can then put your user tag in. I'd be interested to know why after Monaco, not after like this disaster.
Yeah, he also says before that the Ferrari's rear was sliding. It was easy to see. And then he's just coming again saying, interesting that Marchionne was at the race.
Yeah, hang on a second. Can I just pick up on his first point? Because I noticed that coming into the straight in practice, both the Ferrari's rear ends were sliding about, but they were still quick. It was almost like that car was set up so they could really drive it, and they were pushing it to the limit.
Well, it was almost a role reversal with Mercedes, because on Friday, the rear of that Mercedes was not planted at all, particularly through like turn 12, and how many times Lewis lost the back end going through there. And it almost seems like a role reversal for qualifying.
Go on, Matt. I interrupted you. What were you about to come in on?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that Marchionne was there, but not that interesting because so was Dr. Zetsch and every other.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first European
race,
actually, isn't it?
They had a proper meeting before the race. Ooh. All of the manufacturers got together and had a big meeting before the race that Toto Wolff was at. And Ackleson actually made fun of him on the grid when he was talking to Martin Brundle, saying that, oh, they're having a meeting to plan, but they don't know what they're planning for.
Okay. Before we move on from qualifying, can we just talk about the new kids? Obviously, a lot was made about the swap. We talked about it last week, the good and the bad. So for better or for worse, Verstappen was in Kvyat's seat, a nice awkward press conference. But what did you make of the qualifying performances relative of those two guys?
You could see exactly why they replaced him.
What, because Kvyat was so far down?
You look at Verstappen's qualifying versus Kvyat's qualifying, and there it is.
Well, I think Kvyat is, you know, he's in a worse car now. I think that's undeniable. But also, they said that Kvyat was about a quarter of a second slower than Ricciardo on average. But how far back was Verstappen from Ricciardo in Q3? It was about 4/10.
It was 4/10, yeah. And sure.
And I know he's only just stepped inside the car.
Yeah.
And that he's, he's still getting used to everything. But up until that point, he was ahead of Ricciardo.
Yeah, and what position did he start again? Help me out here.
Who, Verstappen, fourth behind his teammate Ricciardo.
Okay. Yeah. And that's why. Yeah. That's why. I mean, how many positions away has Ricciardo been from...
So you're saying it's in Verstappen's favor that he's actually been able to butt up against Ricciardo and get in there.
I mean, he was ahead of the Ferraris and directly behind Ricciardo. And I don't recall the two of them starting on the same row.
Barcelona is a circuit where you do tend to get cars 2x2 on the grid because it's one of those circuits where because they do all of the testing they do there, the drivers could do a lap of that circuit blindfolded. So it does tend to be just the performance of the car that determines the grid. And we see it so often, and it was pretty clear, you know, because you had both Mercedes, both Red Bulls, and then both Ferraris. So I do feel like that was maybe more the performance of the car, but I don't know. I said last week that I didn't think Verstappen was ready for a top two seat, but I did also say I wanted to be proven wrong.
So I spent a lot of time after qualifying saying to everyone, "Can we just calm down? Can we just wait until? Can we just wait till he actually does something?" Okay.
Well, I wasn't impressed after qualifying.
No, I wasn't impressed in qualifying. I wasn't impressed in qualifying at all because, like you say, you made that point to me. But he's 0.4 seconds down, and you can say, yeah, well, you know, he's new to the car and everything like that. But the fact is, he's still 0.4 seconds down, and his fan base was very much saying that was a victory.
And let's just compare Kvyat's performance to Sainz then.
Yes,
just
well,
to
there
get a
we
read
go.
Read on the whole situation, which is my point.
Yeah, no, he was like a second down, wasn't he? On
yeah,
Sainz.
Okay, then. I'm just kind of sort of maybe saying a little bit there.
Okay.
You know, that was like an ouchy moment for Kvyat, I think.
Okay, look, I might be, and there was a few more of those to come. Should we move on to the race itself, Matt? Is this a good time?
No.
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 Okay.
No, we can't because of Craig Alderson.
What does Craig Alderson say?
Well, Craig Alderson would be screaming right now.
Okay.
What about McLaren? They made it to Q3.
Oh, really? You want a slow hand clap for your, is it the first Q3 since when? Since 2013?
I don't know, like 1993, I think.
Since they rejoined with Honda, it's their first Q3 appearance.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but to quote Shania, that don't impress me much.
Bow, okay.
Bow, bow, bow.
What impressed me much was Lewis Hamilton's pole lap.
Okay.
Because did anyone else think that as soon as he came through like turns one and two, you were watching something pretty damn special? The speed he was carried through there and through three... You just knew that this was going to be an almighty lap.
I wasn't expecting it.
For him to turn it around after the Friday and the Saturday morning that he had,
where he looked nowhere, didn't he?
Consistently slower than Rosberg, exactly by tenths.
What of the charge? Go on, here we go, Matt.
This was the first good qualifying that we have seen, and it's because the narrative shaped up properly. Rosberg won round one, Hamilton won round two, and you get two runs in Q3, and Hamilton screwed his first one up, leaving Rosberg on a provisional pole, and all the pressure was there, and you were absolutely right. You could see the speed of him through that first complex was just staggering. It was really exciting to watch, and all the way back too, to see if Ferrari could pull it off. It was an excellent qualifying.
I did not expect Hamilton to come through in that last lap. I wasn't feeling it.
It was like Bahrain, wasn't it? After, because he screwed up the first lap in Bahrain, and then set a new lap record. So he does like those pressure scenarios.
He does, right. Okay, Matt, quickly, in less than a minute, he got an upgraded MGU. Did that give him... MGU-H. Now, did that give him an advantage? Brundle was saying he reckoned that, in a pinch, on their fastest form, Hamilton is about a two-tenths quicker than Rosberg, you know, over a hot lap. Did that new MGU-H give him an advantage, or do you think that's the natural?
Well, it's interesting because that was the two-tenths advantage that we saw through most of last season, at least until the Drivers' Championship was wrapped up, from Hamilton over Rosberg in qualifying. In its reappearance, I think you could see unsettled Nico a little bit, not too much, but a little bit. And is that down to the new shiny bit? I don't know.
Okay.
I can't really say. But it shows you how desperate Mercedes were to solve that problem, that they'd give that part to Lewis rather than to their championship leader.
It was more a reliability advancement, wasn't it, than a speed one?
I didn't hear any specifics on it either way. One would assume so.
So you could say, okay, what? So they're kind of they're giving him the favoritism treatment, but are they not just heading off the conspiracy stuff? Because Mercedes have been rattled by the conspiracy stuff. I'm surprised how much they've responded to it. We could say, yeah, okay, they didn't give it to the championship leader, but they did give it to their two-time defending world champion.
Well, they need to really cover Hamilton off now, because he's used three of the MGU-Hs now, hasn't
right.
he?
Right.
He's on his fourth, yeah.
He's on his fourth, yeah, exactly. So he's going to take a penalty at some point. They need to, it's damage limitation. Rosberg's only just started taking a second of some of his elements.
There's definitely a grid penalty in Hamilton's future, it would appear.
Okay, but not right now. So can we now move on to the race?
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if anyone...
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
No, he didn't even need an apex in this race, did we? There was a minor racing incident on lap one. No apex involved. As far away from two apexes as you could wish to get in Barcelona. Oh my goodness. Shades of Spa. What did you make of it, Matt?
Well, let's see. My official classification, after I saw a replay, I officially called it a racing incident on Twitter, in my view.
Can I tell you what my initial reaction, because we're talking about between turn three and four, my initial reaction, and guys, you know I try not to be a massive Hamilton fanboy. You know I try not to be. Although I am, because I'm British.
No,
he's a three-time world champion. He's British. It's unpatriotic not to be a Lewis Hamilton fan. But
he's not a cool guy.
My first instinct was, I was like, why is he on the grass? Why is he continuing to accelerate? He seems to have made no effort to stop. Oh my God, he's going to collect Rosberg because he can't brake. And then he's in the gravel trap with his helmet in his hands. And my first instinct was, well, Lewis, he's done it. He has done it this time. What on earth have you done, Lewis? That was my initial take, was that it just looked like he'd clattered out his teammate. And I think the Channel 4 commentary also kind of helped along with that and gave that impression. So I laid, for about 2 minutes, I laid the blame onto Hamilton until I saw the overhead, Matt, and then we're going to get into some rules and stuff.
The chat room are asking how many boxes of tissues you went through, though.
Oh, my God. Right. It's a fair question. It's an absolutely fair question. I was... if only you could like see the WhatsApp group that we have with all the Missed Apex contributors. I was crying my little ham-fossy eyes out, wasn't I, Matt? That's not unfair.
No, it's not unfair. And if you were a Hamilton fan, it looked, if you just saw the race, it was interesting to me. The BBC radio coverage seemed to be pretty neutral. I think Alan McNish came down and said he thought it was a racing incident.
Yeah.
Anthony Davidson was sort of split. He said racing incident, but he wanted to look at it. But the rest of the Sky team was very pro-Hamilton.
Yeah, Brundle was very pro-Hamilton, yeah. I don't think Croft was. I don't think Croft was. But, yeah.
There was, but in terms of what I was hearing between the two commentaries, it seemed like Sky was very much took Hamilton's side in wanting to blame Rosberg. Lauda, however, threw him under the bus after the race.
I know,
so
I know.
It was completely his fault on at least two different shows. But when we saw the first replay, looking at Lewis's closing speed on Rosberg, you could see that he was much, much faster.
17 kilometers an hour faster.
And Davidson picked up on the, or Brundle, one of them picked up on the fact that the Rosberg's engine was recharging, which it should not have been at that point. Derated, actually, is what I think. Lewis
okay, so
it
so should we start with that? Because Rosberg also confirmed that he was in a wrong, an incorrect engine setting. And Chris, you were saying to me it's down to the driver to pick what engine mode they start on. Can you?
Yes, because, well, in 2016, the starts have been changed so that, you know, we've got the single clutch pedal now, and the engineers are not allowed to tell the driver from the moment he leaves the pit lane what settings to choose for the start. So they either go through that in the garage before they go out.
Which change was made in the middle of 2015, if I remember correctly? They were limited to what they could tell the drivers.
Yes, I think that one was changed in Austria last year, and then the single clutch pedal is new
this
2016.
Year.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, okay, right. So then let's get to, because I completely fell asleep in that. That bored me. So what did Rosberg do wrong?
Rosberg was basically in the wrong engine setting for the start, which makes me wonder. What did Hamilton do to have a worse start than Nick?
Well, now then, I was arguing with our good friend Anil Palmer about this, actually about a half an hour ago. We got quite shouty with each other, which we've never done before. and he was saying, oh, it's Hamilton's messed the start up again. But it's a long way down to T1 in Barcelona, but it's draft city, isn't it? It's draft central. Go on, Matt.
He did not have a bad start.
That's what I'm saying.
He was cleanly, and he was ahead of Rosberg. He moved over to the inside. Rosberg slipstreamed him down to turn one, and because of the nature of the way the turn is, he was able to take an outside line through turn one and carry more speed, enough speed to get him out in front of Hamilton going into turn two.
But we're not used to seeing Hamilton. I'll tell you, I'll get to you in a second. I'm just saying, we are not used to seeing Hamilton getting overtaken on the outside. We're not used to him conceding that line. What we're used to him seeing is he would brave it on the brakes, know that he's not really going to make the corner at proper racing speed, and shove Rosberg out into the runoff area. But he seemed to, I don't know, be caught napping and let Rosberg round on the outside.
Well, he did say after the race that he found a remarkable lack of grip on that inside line that he was taking.
Yeah.
And that may have been why he was more cautious than usual. I think he sensed that. And we've seen it before when he's been in positions like that. He's mostly been fairly sensible about how far he's going to push. Everybody thinks back to, what is it, Bahrain or Abu Dhabi, whichever one, where he took Rosberg off on the exit of that turn.
We could point at Austin a couple of times where Rosberg hung out to dry.
Yeah.
But those are always on the exits of turns. Oh, those aren't on the entrances to turns.
The critical thing about those incidents as well is that Hamilton didn't end both of their races with those incidents. And I've seen a lot of people saying that we give a real relaxed view about Hamilton pushing Nico off, but in this instance, it's it's absolutely crazy that we should think it's a racing incident, and I disagree with that entirely.
No, Matt, sorry to interrupt you. Hold that thought. We have a caller on the line, but first, T, what has the chat room said?
Okay, so I'm going to use a bit of artistic license for the safe for work thing. Anonymous 38511 said, ha 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 ha, rubbish. Rosberg had a better start. And okay. Senior Trowell said he's happy to finally see Rosberg stood up to Hamilton's moves. Problem is, historically, since Spa, he's always given away and seemed scared.
I stand by it. I think that Hamilton got a good enough start. He in the first phase of that. Anyway, Matt,
He was at, until you got to the entry to turn one, he was ahead of Rosberg. He had a better start. He chose a poorer line.
Okay, we have a caller on line one. Hello, caller.
Good day, mate.
Do we have that doesn't quite sound like a real Australian accent. Who we got on the line?
Your resident troublemaker, Fortis.
Hey, Fortis, Hamfosi44 on Twitter, friend of the show. What opinion do you have on this incident? I have a feeling, a suspicion that you're not going to...
If I gave you my opinion, I'd take up the entire show.
All right, then. Because you've joined us at a naturally good point. We've just talked about Lewis. He missed out on turn one, and I think that was genuine. We think Rosberg just got the better of him there, used the slipstream, got around the outside. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's definitely fair.
Now,
I've got a couple of things. You know, I have my tinfoil hat on today, so
let's hey, get to it. Some of the lunatics are okay.
My concern is this. Rosberg said he was in the wrong setting at the start of the race. No, but he was able to get that good a start and jump Hamilton going into turn one.
Yeah.
Then he realized, holy crap, I'm in the wrong setting. So let's reset, go back to the original setting.
Right.
Because according to Hamilton, the normal setting you go in at the race start is the most powerful setting.
Yeah.
Which clearly Rosberg wasn't in. So is Rosberg doing something different at the race start because he has the instructions glued to his steering wheel? Because if you look at Rosberg's steering wheel, he has all the instructions for the race start on his steering wheel.
Was it just blue tacked on there?
So how did he forget?
All right then. Okay. Well, let's not beat around the bush. What are you implying could have happened?
Well, personally, when you look at it from the onboard of both drivers, Rosberg basically left no room, and the fact that
We can hear you.
And when you look at it again, Lewis' front wing was practically level with Rosberg's rear tire.
Yeah.
So he could go left. And Rosberg kept going right, kept going over and over. So he had to do it. All he could do was keep going to his right.
Chris, can I just quickly ask Chris Stevens there to restart his video? I'll be interested, T, to see when the chat room comes in with anything to disagree with Fortis.
So they're going to disagree. No, everyone disagrees with me.
Okay, well, Fortis, what do you want? I mean, what do you want? Do you want an overtaking lane in F1? You need a gap the size of a bus to let Lewis through every time?
Look, I had no problem with what happened at the first corner. My issue is what happened after that.
Yeah.
Because the fact that in his interview after, Rosberg said, they asked him about, was he distracted? And he said, no, I wasn't, because I only needed to press one button and I know where that button was. But when you watch the onboard analysis from Ant, he first switched the strap mode button. Then he pressed two other buttons while he was still turning right. So to say, and then he even said he could see Lewis coming behind him. So clearly, so, he knew what he was doing.
All right, then. Well, we've got a tin full hats, and I've got you on here, Fortis. Seeing as, in your mind, it's clearly Rosberg's fault. Last time it was his fault. He was ordered, according to some conspiracy theories, to give up the next race in Monza. Do you predict that he'll be told to throw the race in Monaco to hand it back to Hamilton?
It's Monaco, Spanners. He cheats at Monaco every year, so...
He's going to park it do that, in the runoff area.
He's just going to go there and cheat again. And my last thing is,
yep,
to the panel, do you guys think with all the hoopla with Max being moved up to the A team, that they somehow threw Ricciardo under the bus today to give Verstappen the win, because you know Red Bull likes the histrionics with all the creating history and the hype and the big marketing campaign, because all eyes was on Max. So now this puts Helmut in a position where he looks like a god.
Fortis, we will definitely take that question when we come onto the Verstappen topic. Thank you very much for your call. We'll hope to hear from you again very soon. Cheers, Fortis.
Didn't fall out, back off.
Cheers, mate. Bye. Matt, do you want to say a quick word on that, or should we save it for when we get out of this T3
thing? Just remind me about Max's post-race quote on Ricciardo.
I'll have to write that down.
When we get there. Yeah. I'm afraid I'll forget it by the time Max. We get there, because we'll be talking about, as did the TV commentary, it was well into lap 20 before they actually remembered there was a race going on, it seemed like to me. Well, pretty much when Hülkenberg's car caught on fire, that like they're like, oh, yes, right, their car's on track, aren't there? It's not just all about who was to blame in this incident.
Okay, then. So let's lay it out then. The ways in which... Go on.
But here's what I want to say. Having raced, although bicycles, not cars... If you look at Hamilton's closing speed on Rosberg when he came around that turn, he had to immediately choose to go one direction or the other direction or slow down. And given the nature of the track at Barcelona and the total lack of passing we saw amongst the top four, it was very much a now or never kind of motion. If he'd come out of lap one behind Rosberg, he would have been there for the whole race.
Yep. Absolutely.
I'm just going to say that's just the way the track
with that kind of closing speed, when you've got a car that is harvesting rather than accelerating.
Have you ever been on the highway and come up on an unexpected stop?
Yeah.
And you see people veer off into under the shoulder to not hit the person in front of them?
Yep.
That was the kind of closing speed. He did not expect Rosberg to be going that slow.
Yeah.
He picked the widest lane and aimed at it.
Now, when he started the move, the right-hand lane was the widest lane.
Absolutely. There was not room to the other side because Rosberg had wandered out there because, as Ford has pointed out and was very clear on video, he was looking left at that gauge when he turned it.
You
not for very
really,
long.
Go on, Matt.
You want to be on the inside of 10-foot. Passing around the outside of 10-4 is a...
Yeah, it's a long hairpin, isn't it?
He pushed out wide, and he probably would have then been passed by Ricciardo into turn 5. So it had to be an inside move.
But my point would be that Rosberg was momentarily, when I say momentarily, I'm talking like quarter second-ish, distracted by getting that dial into the right spot. And when he looked back, he saw Hamilton coming, but because he looked late, and saw late, he didn't fully grasp how much quicker Hamilton was. And when he moved right to close the door, it was already too late. And you could see there's F1 writers had a great video up from Hamilton's onboard of the incident. And you could see, even as he squeezed over halfway under the grass, there was another rightward movement of the car, which I'm not even sure was intentional. I'm almost wondering if...
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
he almost lost the car under acceleration. Rosberg did for a second, lost the rears, and it bobbled the car.
Yeah, it wasn't a straight move over, was it? Now I'm anticipating some feedback, T, because we've been all pro Hamilton so far.
Oh, it's all going off in here.
Okay,
we've got Senior Troll. Is that because Hamilton just expects people, not least Rosberg, to get out of his way? Bravery or arrogance?
Well, he does expect Rosberg to get out of his way, and he's got really good reason to expect that, because it has happened a lot, Spa aside.
Yeah, at almost 20 kilometers an hour, that's a ridiculous statement.
You can't expect that Hamilton wouldn't have got... He had to make a move. Go on, T, next one.
Hamilton will have another hair in his eye when Rosberg wins Monaco.
That was funny. Dude, that's lame. If you've got a hair in...
He cheats at Monaco every year.
Wait a second. About the hair in the eye.
Go on.
Lewis, please never, ever just moan about hair in your eye again. Just, if you've got a hair in your eye, just take it. Just keep it to yourself. That's just, who was the boxer? Who was the boxer who had the toe when he lost against, in the heavyweight? Oh, why is his name... Come on, David Haye. David Haye lost that title fight, and then he showed everyone in the press conference the scar he had on his toe, that he'd hurt his toe in training. And it was the lamest excuse in sporting history. So, Lewis, please, don't talk about a contact lens in your eye or whatever.
Someone else has chucked in Fortis as a typical 44 fanboy. does 44's car not have brakes? Something about someone's mother. That's getting wild in here.
Was that Matt talking about mothers again? Okay, look, can we just assume, everyone in the chat room, everyone's mother is a saint, okay? Can we please leave it at that? Go on, Matt.
I'm just getting... This is the thing. It's fun to look back and see where all this started. Who might have done this? Who might have done that? But what... The mistake we all make is watch the incident in real time. Sit on board with Lewis Hamilton and see how fast he came up on Rosberg. Look at how little time Rosberg had to react. Yeah. Mm. At speed, when it happened, you just can't really apportion too much blame to either driver, I don't think. I think it's just one of those damn things that happens.
No, I think...
And it's a mistake to go back too much and do what we're doing now.
Well, here's what I want to say on it, is that racing incident is probably fair. I know I'm a Hamilton fanboy, but I can't fault what he did. He had to make a move. He went over to the widest side. He got alongside Rosberg. Now, Article 27.1 or whatever says if a significant portion of the car, and it defines what that means, which is if any part of the front wing is level with the rear of the car, which it clearly was, then they are entitled to a car's width, and that is on the straight before the braking zone. Now, that's a fact of the rules, and Hamilton is entitled to have made that move. But I will say it might have been harsh to give Rosberg a penalty for breaking that rule, which he did, because of the closing speed. He can't have known where Hamilton was going to be by the time he went over there. He just wanted to shut that door. Now, if Hamilton hadn't have got alongside him, and Rosberg had made the one move across and blocked him in time, that would have been completely legal. That would have been his one move to block, and Hamilton would have had to then have tried to come around on the outside. So for me, it was either a harsh Rosberg penalty or a racing incident. And I believe I've read a very long transcript that Vortex sent me about the stewards' view on it, and that seems to be what they've said, which is, yes, Rosberg broke a rule. He violated the rule. He pushed Rosberg off the track, Hamilton off the track. Once Hamilton was on the grass, he wasn't responsible for his actions. However, we understand why Rosberg did that, and he didn't have time to react. Have I about summarized that well enough, Matt?
Yeah, no, you've summarized it exactly. And in fact, I'm having a discussion with Vortex in a chat room right now, which amounts to, yes, Rosberg was aware of Hamilton, but I firmly believe that he was not able to properly pick up Hamilton's closing speed because he was distracted by changing that setting. This all really amounts to is that Mercedes has made probably the most expensive don't drive distracted commercial in the history of the world.
It's not quite Maldonado China level, is it? But,
You know, I mean, like, forget texting. Don't even change your air conditioning setting because that's how quick it can all go sideways on you.
Do you know what's really interesting? The most interesting thing about this whole thing for me was that Speed Week, I think on the formation lap, reported that Mercedes were taking up Rosberg's option for 2017.
Yes, they did. They
which,
reported
which
both.
You showed that to me, Matt, didn't you?
Yeah,
on the formation lap. Might change their mind after that.
Okay, look, guys, I think unless there's anything significant in the chat room, T, I'm sure I'm getting a bit of abuse.
But you always are. I just filter it out sometimes so you don't get a complex.
I don't want to cry. I'm a sensitive lad.
Vortex is shouting out saying he thought he saw Rosberg said that he changed seconds without looking down. Seconds didn't distract him. But
that's what he said in the he said that in the pen. He did say that, but that could just be a lie. I mean, people lie.
Well, yeah, you don't want to tell everyone.
You don't want to just go, I ran my teammate off the track because I was looking at my steering wheel. You should never admit that. That's and I would back
probably
I would back Rosberg for that lie 100%. I would tell my son to tell that lie. Anything else?
Just more of the same, mate.
Just more abuse, generally. All right, look, that incident at T1...
Oh, sorry. Senior trial. Hamill didn't help by chucking a 50k steering wheel in frustration.
No, I know. He doesn't...
I just dropped in. I just saw that as well earlier on. I was just thinking, okay.
Just keep your emotions. Just wear your heart on your sleeve. That is fine. But just sometimes, as no one said to him, just sometimes count to five and see how you feel. Because sometimes you feel differently when you get to five than when you started counting at one. So, that's a Paddy, and that goes against him. So, look, we've spent a lot of time on this incident at T3, and I'm willing to let the show go a little long. But fair enough, because the implications in the championship are massive. And if I was a Rosberg fan, knowing how much luck he'd had and how much he has nailed it and taken advantage of every bit of luck he's had, Hamilton having a strong qualifying and showing the pace and being on pole, if you'd have asked me as a Rosberg fan before the race, would I take them both being clattered out and the steward saying it was a racing incident, you'd probably take it, wouldn't you? It's one less race for Hamilton to come back.
Well, the bigger implication now is what do Mercedes do in reaction to it? Because after Spa in 2014, they stopped them racing. Are they going to do the same thing this year and just give it to whoever leads out of turn one or whoever's on pole is going to be the one who
This is where Mercedes, they have a big ethos challenge here because they've always made a big deal about how they let their drivers race. And I really hope they don't kill the championship by saying it's whoever leads through T1 and then they have to stick to the same tyre strategies and the rest of it. I really hope, but I don't expect.
You know by now that if either one of them shows the other a wheel, they're not going to want to give the other one an inch.
No, absolutely
If anything,
not.
They're just going to get more aggressive with each other.
Okay, so guys, just remember, you don't just have to do the chat room to interact with us. You can do with what Fortis did and call us on the Skype app. Yeah, you don't need any fancy tech. Just use your mobile phone, Skype app, add spanners ready, and you can call me any given Sunday. And it's just nice to have some girly singing as a bit of a break to listening to the likes of me, Chris, the wildling from the north, Tony, and the usurper from the colonies, Matt Trumpets. Something amazing happened, Matt. A very, very young person won a racing car race. I've got a bit of humble pie to swallow, telling everyone to stop getting excited until he's done something. Well, he's done something. He's won a Grand Prix.
I think a lot of people had a wee bit of humble pie to consume this weekend. Chris Stevens.
What did Chris do?
I wanted to be proven wrong.
Okay.
Does anybody ever really want to be proven wrong?
Look, I think I was fairly fair. I think I said, I never said like, oh, he's rubbish or anything like that. I just said, he hasn't done anything yet. Let's wait till he's done something. And after qualifying, wasn't impressed particularly. But I wasn't expecting him to do anything. But then he's gone and won the race. So, I mean, to my mind, I'll get to it, that there were some circumstances. Obviously two Mercedes taking each other out helps. But I'm not going to take anything away from the lad. He's turned up to Red Bull. He's stuck it on the track. He's done everything. He's ridden every bit of luck that's come his way. And he's won a Grand Prix. That's no mean feat, is it, Matt? You can't do anything but say massive congratulations to Max Verstappen.
Yeah, and you can't take away how long he made those tires last in his final stint, because it was looking a bit slippery out there for both he and Raikkonen by the time they got to lap 66.
33 laps or something he had to do on those tires? That's crazy. Yeah,
something like crazy. That. Nobody thought they'd go that long.
To have Kimi Raikkonen sniffing your gearbox the entire way, that's impressive.
Well, is it?
It is. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, 18, of course it is.
How do you have such a calm? I am a little bit older than Max Verstappen.
Not much.
No, by like a couple of months.
You're so young. Young that you don't harbour any bitterness for the late 90s and for the 1994 incident with Damon Hill getting taken out.
Oh, here we go.
Because I do. I absolutely do. No. I just think that you shouldn't judge the entire of Schumacher's career based on that one corner.
No deal.
It was more than one.
It was okay. Yeah, fine. There was more than one. I'll give you that one. But
Chris Cheetah.
The guy was unstoppable in the 2000s. Come on.
Unstoppable Cheetah, maybe.
Okay, Chris. We'll pick this up another show.
Another time.
We'll pick this up another show. Your point was that you are slightly older than Max Verstappen.
Yes, I'm slightly older, and I get hot-headed and confused by a lot of things, by the stupidest of things.
Oh, girls! That girl looked at me.
Yeah, by day, I'm a sales advisor, and if somebody wants a refund on something, I start to panic. How do I do this again? He's just had a world champion following him around Circuit de Catalunya for 33 laps and just gone, yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. Not bad.
So I was hugely impressed by that. Like, the nerves of steel, really, because if he made any sort of mistake, you know, it would be pounced upon.
I mean,
you know, so he had to play it cool consistently for like, about at least half the race.
It was the final sector that was so crucial. That exit from the final chicane to set him up, because he just eked out that extra tenth and a half he needed to keep Raikkonen from having a lunge at turn one. It was so critical for him, because you saw it, every single time Raikkonen was gaining in the DRS, it's something like half a second down that pit straight. It was like 2011, Hamilton and Vettel. Vettel always just managed to get the traction off the final chicane to keep Hamilton at bay. It's the same scenario this weekend.
Okay, I would like Matt to talk a little on the battle between Ferrari and Red Bull and where it was won or lost, because we had a great race. Any one of four cars could have won this race today, Matt. And that's the first time this has happened in a long, long time.
It was lost when Ferrari decided to cover off Ricciardo's switch to a three-stop strategy, which happened right around lap 29.
Okay, so explain. So lap 29, Ricciardo's leading the Grand Prix. He decides... Does he decide? No, Red Bull decides. Now, this was Fortis's question, and something Max Verstappen actually said was, Ricciardo... I think he said this. He said Ricciardo was going slow and he asked for Ricciardo to hurry up, and therefore they moved him onto a three-stop strategy to release Verstappen. And that was very much what Max wanted us to think in his post-race interview. And is this what you believe?
If they could have just swapped them around and had a 1-2 finish rather than a 1-4. So...
It would be very controversial to make Daniel Ricciardo move over to the lad they've just brought in the last race. I think that's too big of a media kind of foul for them to have done that.
Ricciardo did say that the move didn't make any sense to put him on a three-stop.
Yeah, that's what he said post-race, that he didn't know why he was switched to a three-stop.
So do you honestly think then that he was moved to a three-stop to release Verstappen? Because if he did, right, here's my take. Because I've gone. Let T get in there.
Yeah, just while it's relevant, while the chats are coming in, Vortex is jumping in. Ricciardo is done already. He just doesn't know it yet. He's a great driver, but he's no longer Marco's favourite son. And then Anonymous 43941, Ricciardo to Ferrari.
Who are they going to replace Ricciardo with?
Signs.
Yeah, I mean, that. Why not continue that? That would be a pretty great battle.
We'll get back to that in a second, because I love unpacking that quote from Verstappen.
Go on, let's do it.
Because there's only a couple of the only couple of reasons to switch Ricciardo to a three stop.
Yeah.
One, they wanted Verstappen to win.
Yep.
And they wanted it all along because they knew it would be a record, and they had suddenly the track position and no Mercedes in front of them. And that you could just do the math, and they could tell you that was a possibility. I don't think that's highly likely. I think the most likely scenario is that they were anticipating Ferrari, and that they saw Vettel and Ricciardo fighting for the win at the end with fresh tires, which is what should have happened.
Yeah.
Except the medium tire went way farther than anybody expected.
Also, the simulations predicted a three-stop to be quicker than a two-stop, if you can find your way through the traffic.
Now, I have to say, that was my instinct, because Ricciardo changed to the three-stop. Vettel did it as well. Now, was Vettel reacting to Ricciardo?
Yes, absolutely.
Right, okay, so they were reacting to Ricciardo. Now, I got the feeling that both teams were putting their number one drivers on what they thought was the best strategy and were covering off with their number two drivers. That's the feeling I got, conspiracy aside. And all that happened was that it turned out the two-stop was quicker, because there's no way Ferrari do a tactic that deliberately puts Kimi Raikkonen in front of Sebastian Vettel. So if they did that their tactic that way round, it's conceivable to think that Red Bull strategists came to a similar opinion. So I don't buy the conspiracy. I think they thought that the three-stop would be quicker, and they were just wrong. And that put Verstappen out with Kimi, who is always the slowest Ferrari. Sorry, Viv. And that's what made me think there was no conspiracy.
Right. I disagree on your Raikkonen thing. But...
Oh, God, we've got enough. We've got another one.
Come on.
Okay, you can't disagree with this. You might think Kimi's good for some reason. You might be a very young drinker. You might have been abusing solvents. I don't know. But you can't disagree with the fact that Ferrari favour Vettel. And they have time and time again put Kimi Raikkonen on a strategy that is bad for Kimi Raikkonen, but good for Ferrari. And that's what they did again today.
Well, yes. I will give you
They accidentally put Kimi in front.
Favorably upon Vettel. I do think maybe unfairly sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll give you this one.
Okay, so that's what makes me think. Okay, so Verstappen ends up ahead. He does everything he needs to do. Matt.
In which case, Verstappen's post-race quote was essentially, I whined on the radio and it worked out for me. Therefore, Red Bull did exactly what I asked, much like any toddler. Oops.
Hang
Didn't
on a
mean
second.
To offend all of our Dutch
I
listeners.
I want the pony. I want it now.
Get Ricciardo out of my way. Get Ricciardo out of my way. Ooh, Ricciardo's out of my way. I win. Yay. And in the meantime, Red Bull strategists are like, that three stop should have been faster. What the hell happened?
Or you could just say, I've got a feeling that Max is going to be a very media savvy young man and will be very, very good at putting the right. I get a feeling that him and Josh are just masters of spin and handling the media. Chris?
Things we go on about, you know, how, you know, Max is a bit whiny sometimes. You know, Australia is a prime example of that. But we, literally 5 minutes ago, were praising him for being able to get these tyres to do half the race distance and for keeping Raikkonen at bay. So you can't deny it. The boy has got such extreme talent. And I have seen a lot of people saying, oh, a kid can drive a Formula One car. That's not impressive.
No, he's not
certain grumpy old Italian people.
He's not a kid. Carlo Colucci, we're talking to you.
He's not the first. Yeah. I've seen it so many times. Facebook.
Right, if an 18... No, I hate this argument. So if an 18-year-old can drive an F1 car well, that means F1 is doing absolute rubbish. There are 18-year-olds on the front line of countries and are in war zones everywhere around the world, being absolutely fine soldiers, being more of a man than many a 40-year-old. So, I'm sorry, an 18-year-old is a fully grown man who can drive a racing car.
I was going for a more smaller approach to that in that Formula One cars are really very difficult to drive these days because they are producing more power and more torque than they ever have done before. They don't have as much downforce.
But to suggest that somehow an 18-year-old is going to be less capable than a 30-year-old is ridiculous. Name any other sport where that's true. I don't know if you've tried running against any 18-year-olds recently.
I haven't tried running full stop for a lot of years.
Shows.
So I wouldn't know.
Go on, Matt.
I would absolutely say cycling. There's one where you're not going to win the Tour de France as an 18-year-old, even if you run it.
Well, because they won't let you do the blood, where you take the blood in and out of your arm.
No, it just cheaty blood. It's the experience. I think the experience and the judgment, although we certainly didn't see that from Mercedes today so much.
Okay, so I've got two schools. Go on then. Go on.
But we did from Verstappen, which is interesting.
But I've got two schools of thoughts here, which is A, you guys said to me when I was ranting about anyone would have be leading the championship in Rosberg's position, you all said, oh, no, he had to get it done, he had to be cool, he had to be calm. I think the same argument applies to Max Verstappen. The strategy fell into his lap. Yes, Mercedes knocked out of the way. But there are a lot of drivers in Max's car today who would not have brought home a Grand Prix win in the young lad's defense. So the question is, do we think Kvyat would have won in that car?
Clearly Maldonado could not have done it.
No.
Oh, wait.
God, 2012,
Do you know what the weird thing is?
Hamilton's ass today.
Hamilton's pole time is the same as Maldonado's to the 1,000 from 2012.
Oh, is it?
Does no one else think that's a bit weird?
Look, I'm trying my best here, Max Verstappen fans. I'm trying my best. As a doubter who thought it was overhyped, I'm trying my best to say the lad's done really well. Do you think Kvyat would have won that race? There we go. Chat room, do you think Kvyat would have won that race?
That is a really difficult
race. The chat room haven't jumped in with that, but I've got a theory, okay? So talking about how the stop strategies were changed, do we think possibly it was awesome for publicity for the team saying, oh, look at our 18-year-old winner. We're setting world records.
And we're a genius for picking him.
If Kvyat was in that seat, it wouldn't have been as big of a deal to fudge it so he could win. It wouldn't have been that big of a deal to make circumstances more fortuitous for him.
This is a good conspiracy. Yeah, so what you're saying
not conspiracy as such.
Now, Chris, I'm going to interrupt you. Yeah, no, I like what you're saying there, T. What you're saying is they made this sort of big, bold move to bring Max Verstappen in. What better way to shut everyone up than have him, win the Grand Prix?
Halfway through the race or a third through the race, they're like, hold on a minute. If things work out and stops work out, this kid's got a chance of winning here. World record. They're going to talk about this for decades.
Ricciardo's going to move to Ferrari anyway. Let's just bring him to a three-stopper. I bet Ferrari is so bad at strategy that they'll make Vettel follow.
I don't think that's conspiracy stuff. I mean, that makes good business sense in a way. You know, it's in the whole global thing of it. You know, it's good for the team. So would they have done that Kvyat?
Matt, go on. Let's wrap up.
He did bring it home without issue in China. Kvyat did.
He did. That's true. And it was a similar kind of situation. Yep. So, poor Ricardo, though. You know, how is Ricardo feeling right now?
And apologies to Senior Troll. He said he made that joke last week. Should Verstappen win a race? So,
which
apologies
joke?
There.
Which joke
I
is
completely
that?
Forgot about it.
Okay, so...
In the chat room.
So, again, we've spent a lot of time on that, probably at the expense of anything else that happened in the race. I tell you what, why don't you pick out just like one or two things of note. Hülkenberg cannot buy any luck at the moment. Perez, pretty good to finish in P7. Magnussen took himself to court, basically, and hands up on an instant I didn't see and admitted he did stuff wrong and got penalty points.
And a 10-second time penalty.
A 10-second time penalty. Guys, I'm going to move on to the podium section of the show, unless there's anything screaming out to you. Carlos Sainz, yes?
P6, very impressive. P3 at one point after all the calamities at the start.
Absolutely. I was going to save that for the end of the race. But how could you not talk about... Okay, a couple of things. Who got fast lap?
Don't know.
Dan, who could you?
Yeah. And he got hung up behind Ricciardo and Vettel.
Oh,
he was running 126s. He was like almost 4 seconds a lap. I mean, he was insanely faster than everybody else. Well, and he couldn't pass anyone because that's where he was on track. They wouldn't let him by. But yeah, that was a bad luck for him.
Well,
Sainz doing so well.
Apologies that if you know, for the stuff we've missed out, but with those two key incidents, you know, stuff was always going to get compromised on the podcast.
Two retirements, Grosjean and Alonso.
Poor Grosjean.
Tierra's driving backwards out of the points at the end of the race, and of course Ricardo's sad puncture.
Right, okay, so let's go through those in order. Ricardo, that was just a final stab in the back from the F1 gods, wasn't it? Just to go, this ain't your race, sunshine.
Oh, I was gutted for him, absolutely gutted.
You're saying to you that Ricardo's...
I've been watching it long enough now that I've got a guy. I think he's my guy.
He's your guy?
I think he's my guy. And
okay.
I was rooting for him, and then...
Okay, so now that you have a guy in F1, I have to teach you the rules, obviously, when you go into the forums and the comments section. Okay, so now, Ricardo can do no wrong. It is never Ricardo's fault. Okay, so that's the first rule of having a guy in F1. So you now have to hate Verstappen, unfortunately. That's just the way that F1 fandom works.
Oh, well, I'm sure I can work on that.
Think of some, like, Dutch insults and stuff like that, basically. That's the line you've got. But I didn't make the rules. Matt?
Yeah, and if we're going to talk about things, can we talk about Vettel complaining about Ricardo's move lap?
Oh, my God. Shut up, Vettel. Shut up.
Barton Brundle's response, stop moaning. Oh,
does he really think that no one's allowed to, like, pull a move on him? Just get over yourself, for goodness sake, Seb. But it just seems like now you can't overtake Vettel without him whinging.
There you go. That's it.
It was a great move by Ricardo. Doomed. Utterly doomed. But that's why Ricardo's a great racing driver, because he's going to attempt that kind of move. And Vettel, you just be a grown-up enough to know that if someone makes a move like that, judge it. You're gonna come off best. So just quit your whinging.
I mean, come on, how long do you have down that straight to know that he's coming with DRS and that's what's going to happen? It's not like there was any real danger of a collision as long as you kept your brain screwed down correctly.
I don't know. I think Vettel has kind of set him up now, like himself up, that he's the elder statesman. I think he's taken sort of a leaf out of the Jensen Button post-race interview book, and he feels just like he can lecture and school everyone on stuff. But you know what, Vettel? You've still got stuff to prove yourself, mate.
You know what was interesting, though, when they were going at it, there was a point at which they both came up on Gutierrez.
Yep.
And fascinatingly, Vettel got right by him, and then Gutierrez just slotted onto the racing line and made Ricardo wait through that whole turn complex before he got back out of the way.
And a basket of...
a couple of car links.
And a bucket of complimentary... Sorry, can you not hear me, Chris? Is that why you're interrupting me and disrespecting me here in my podcasting shed? Now go on, you carry on, mate.
Sorry. I was just going to say, wasn't that when he got the puncture?
Ricardo? No, I think it was earlier than that.
It was earlier. I was just going to say there was probably a nice hamper of, like, preserves and smelling bath salts delivered to the Haas garage, the Haas motorhome.
Yeah. It had nothing to do with the Ferrari engine in the back of the car.
or the wind tunnel or anything like that. Okay, guys. Yes, apologies for anything we've missed out, but it is definitely time to move on to the podium. This music is old enough that it is not copyright protected. Therefore, I get to use it as a bumper. I hope I have got that aspect of the law right. T, you had a comment about the podium.
I did, right? I'm fairly new to it, as you know. Raikkonen, is he always like that? like a petulant, moody, like, you got second place, mate. Come on. Just put a smile on. He was like, oh, blah, blah, I was losing downforce and blah, blah. No recognition to the lad's achievement. I mean, and there's parties for and against. Oh, yeah, well, did he have to do much? I mean, the bottom line was he's 18-year-old and he's fought with someone for 30 laps, And he's just like, no recognition whatsoever. And he's just got a monk on. And I'm just thinking, come on, mate. And then you've got Vettel, when they moved on to him, his first words were, oh, first of all, many congratulations to Max. This is his day. Then he says his thing. And then at the end, he reiterates that again, which was sporting, and I enjoyed that.
Absolutely.
Right, going to come on, shape up, mate.
The podium, a few people let themselves down on the podium, because at the end of the day, this is the bit where you just be a good loser, be a good winner, all the rest of it. But to answer your question, yes, Raikkonen is like that. And a lot of people think he's super cool for going and not giving answers to interviews. But as far as I'm concerned, we are all paying customers to Formula One, be it through the license fee, be it to watching the adverts on Channel 4, be it to paying our Sky subscription. We are paying, apart from some people on this panel, for the rights to watch Formula One. And part of that package deal is their interaction with the media. And Raikkonen seems to have this attitude that he doesn't owe anyone anything. But I'm afraid you actually do. It is actually part of your job. And it is actually part of the interaction and the trade we're making. Go on, defend him, someone.
Right. So when he became well-known and popular, that very self-same characteristic was what won him so many followers based on the comparison of the driver at the time. Now, what's interesting to me, though, is that someone asked him whether or not he had got a Ferrari company car as part of his contract. And his answer was, no, because I need room for a car seat in my family.
Don't Ferrari
do this. The thing is, he'll give you those answers. How can you not love him for that?
No, that's fair enough. But, you know, he does it very much on his terms. Like, if he's not in the mood to talk, it's just one-word answers. And he just, you know, he gives you absolutely nothing. And I find that rude. And I don't know.
He gave us, come on, leave me alone. I know what I'm doing. How can you bang on him this much? He's like an asset to the sport. He says things
Everyone
like this.
Everyone has that on a t-shirt now.
Yeah. All right. Well.
Brilliant.
I someone a lot of money.
Okay. Well, let me know. Let me know why I'm wrong, and I'll tell you why you're wrong for thinking I'm wrong. All right, guys. I think that brings us on to the end of the podcast. Let's see if we can surprise anyone with the driver of the race. Who is your driver of the race, Matthew Trumpets?
Oh, Carlos Sainz.
Carlos Sainz. A lot to prove, and perhaps did prove.
Proved all of it. Yeah.
Chris, Kimi Raikkonen.
No, I'm going to go with JB.
With Jenson JB. Button, did he race this weekend?
Amazingly, he did. And did very well.
Right, you're an idiot. Pick someone proper. Come on, I don't get you on here just to talk. You used to be value. You've been value on E-Radio, and that was just rubbish.
Thanks very much.
Okay, no, fine.
I'll say the others were Max Verstappen.
No, we'll leave your stupid answer hanging in the internet. Tony, you know drivers' names now.
I do. I'm going to say Fiat for firing out some outstanding laps, given that he's in a slower car now, and I think that was awesome.
Okay, that's not bad.
Well, there you go.
Anything from the chat team?
Yes, lots. When you asked me before in the private chat, I was like, no, nothing. I forgot to scroll down, so sorry, everybody.
Oh, for goodness sake, you have one job.
Is there anything in there that's almost as bad as having...
Go on, Matt, go on.
No, go ahead, Chris.
No, is anyone backing me up about JB in the chat?
Let me check.
No, because the chat room's not stupid.
No, I'm going to put a tweet out.
Yeah, actually,
give
respect the chat
second.
Room.
One second, we'll let Twitter decide this.
Oh my All gosh, right. we're not so, waiting for Twitter replies.
Anonymous 4394. Does it even matter what the numbers are?
No, just say
Hamilton
guessed.
Said he's the Hamilton driver of the race. Ken's jumping in. Haha. First two panelists don't choose
Verstappen.
Verstappen, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And another anonymous. Without Hamilton taking out Rosberg, this race would have been a bore.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. I don't know. I would have liked to have seen who would have come out on top of the Merck battle. I'm going to pick Max Verstappen, who's an 18-year-old. Congratulations. Neither of you two chose him. Congratulations for winning a Grand Prix. No. This is a good start for Max Verstappen. I'm very happy for him. It's a great start. And for a young man who has some talent, all the pressure, all the can he do it, can't he do it, that's kind of gone now. He's got it under his belt. There's no kind of bogey, when's his first podium, when's his first win going to come. Now we can see really what he's going to do over the course of the season, and let's see if he's as good as everyone's saying he is. And apologies to the chat room for Tony's incompetence. He literally texted me and said, chat room's been dead for 15 minutes. So I'm extremely sorry. if that is perceived as wasted effort, we will make it up to you. Who this week? Who missed the apex this week? Chris Stevens. I don't know if he's...
Before I say that, can I just point out that on another podcast, the host asked me, we're unlikely to have a 10th different winner in 10 different years in Spain. And I said, no, we're going to get a 10th. It'll be Verstappen. So I...
You said that.
I said that, apparently.
Yeah, some people voted for Leicester City and are now claiming they're geniuses, okay? Like, unlikely things do happen.
So, yeah, that's amazing.
That wasn't the question I asked you. You are frustrating me. I regret inviting you on. Who missed the apex, Chris?
Who missed the apex? Can I say Haas?
Sure.
Like a collective?
Yeah, absolutely. You can do that, today. Yeah. Okay, cool. Matt Trumpets.
Well, I was going to go with Gutierrez till you did that. So now I have to put on my thinking cap.
Go on.
Mercedes is the obvious one.
Just as a team.
They managed. But I can't give them missing the apex, because had they not done that, the race would have been, as has been said, incredibly boring. It would have been medium, medium, soft, first, medium, soft, medium, and whoever was leading at the end of lap one would have been the winner. So, you know, I can't. Can we give a missed apex for that? I don't know. It's challenging.
Again, one question. What is wrong with you guys today? Pick one.
Ferrari strategist. Boom.
Done. Absolutely fair enough. Tony?
I was going to say that.
Were you really?
Yeah, for reals.
Okay.
Somebody mentioned earlier about bringing someone in on softs after 8 laps. I was like, oh, that's a good one.
Okay, you can have Ferrari. We'll pick that. I'm going to pick Pat Simmons because...
We didn't talk about that.
I know we didn't. We just didn't have time. Look, maybe we'll get to it next week, because that was very, very interesting. I believe I'm no Massa fan. I do not like Felipe Massa. I think he's garbage as a driver. But it's not his fault if he gets put out into traffic. It's not his fault if he doesn't have time to do his qualifying lap. And Pat Simmons should not be coming out immediately before Felipe's had a chance to take his helmet off and coming out and just going, well, I've looked at the data, can't argue with it, it's the driver's fault. And I think that makes Pat Simmons a bit of a git. So he misses the apex for me. Chris Stevens, would you like to plug anything on the internet?
Yes, www.formulaspy.com. That's where I write.
You write there, don't you?
I write there.
You're trying to be a proper, like, proper F1 journalist, aren't you? Like a full-on credited...
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I've Formula E is like my short-term goal, but I love covering Formula E as well. Hopefully, I'll be in Berlin.
I mean, the FAA, they do monitor people who are like after like FAA credentials and stuff like that. For example, if I asked you, do you think that Bernie Eccleston has ever committed a crime? What would you say to that? Do you think he's ever accepted money to break the law? What do you reckon?
I mean, I'm a big fan of Panorama. But
so you can't even answer that. That's good. That shows ambition. I like it. I'm going to move on to Tony Thunder Beast Barnard. Where can people find you speaking about things?
You can look at my Facebook page, Dad Hub. It's hilarious and awesome. And I'm on Twitter at Dad's View.
And on a Dad's View podcast, where we recently, just you and me, recorded The Legend of Treeface.
Such a good episode. Episode 40. Check it out. And you find out about Treeface in the first 10 minutes, so you don't have to...
Yeah, it's not clickbait. It's not clickbait. Treeface. Oh, the legend of Treeface. It's good.
Inside of 10 minutes. Check it out. If you like it, stay. If you don't...
Exactly. If you don't like A Dad's View in the first 12 minutes of episode 40, you're never going to like it. So that's why... Matt, where can
you... Go and have a drink and come back and try it again.
No, it's much more enjoyable drunk. Matt, where can people find you? You've done some fantastic... You are the best writer of F1 race reviews on the internet, Matthew. No. Who are you? You've just turned up Johnny Come Lately. Matt Trumpets nails it week in, week out.
One of my commenters would seriously beg to differ with you, but it doesn't matter. You can find me on the Twitter at Matt PT55. You can find my reviews at thejudge13.com. And you can all go buy my wife's new book coming out on the 30th at Amazon, Amanda Weaver, A Common Scandal.
A Common Scandal.
So watch the race in peace.
I really hope Chris Stevens will come back again. All of it in jest, of course. I would urge people to go and check me out at www.spannersready.com. Basically, if you enjoy listening to me here, you will enjoy all of the content at spannersready.com. If you think I'm an idiot, don't bother. We are getting an incoming call from Toto Wolff. Unfortunately, we simply don't have the time to take it, but I promise you, it will be worthwhile. Check out the Support Us page if you're into that kind of thing. You can support Missed Apex Podcast and A Dad's View at www.spannersready.com. Until then, wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. Honestly, before this episode, like, I rated Chris, like, so high. I'm holding my hand very high up.
I rated you, but then you missed out comment of the week.
I missed out comment of the week. Should we squeeze it in?
Come on, it was a good one.
No, come on, let's squeeze it in. Comment of the week. Oh, there's nothing like a little Easter egg at the end of an episode. Go on, give us comment of the week.
Hi, guys. Welcome to comment of the week. This week's comment of the week comes from Martin Hales. Hulkenberg having to extinguish his own car as the fire marshal couldn't use extinguisher.
Did you see that?
Right, mate, that was hilarious. I was watching it thinking, and Hulkenberg's like, give it here, you idiot.
No, but they had two good...
What are you doing?
The first guy, he squirted it, it hit the rear wing, the wind then blew it back in his face, and he ran away. He ran away from his own fire extinguisher fumes.
He's got to be stood there thinking, my future at F1 is literally going up in smoke and you're messing around with the fire extinguisher. You can't get hold of the end properly. Give it here. And then they were sort of wrestling over it, or it was stuck on the marshal's glove or something. I was just thinking, get off and let me do this.
Oh, thanks for that. Thanks for that comment of the week. I think that's a good place to leave it. Oh, yeah. Let's check this out. Have you heard the news? Everyone's talking. Oscar 6 and everything awesome. It used to be 5 and now's a new opportunity. Now it's time to take school more seriously. I'm Oscar's dad. Sick of my job. I just want to sleep and be a slob. There's just one thing I desire. He'll be a racing car champion. I can retire. It's awesome to win. There's no room to lose. No room to lose. Yeah, baby. I have delivered. Oh, I delivered.
That was sick.
There's nothing lame about that. I'm the coolest dad in the world.
Wow. Oh my God.
That was incredible.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.